We've been covering the case of Jeffrey Sterling for a long time since it began, and we've been talking to folks at the New York Times, James Rise and more, and of course one of our guests, Norman Solomon, has been joining us to talk about that. He was convicted yesterday in court. We're going to talk about the significance of that. Norman is with us. He's executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, coordinator of ExposeFacts.org, and Jay Kirk, YB. Did I say your last name right, Jay Kirk?
No, it's actually Wiebe.
Thank you. Got it. Well, say that right the next. Well, before you leave, J. Kirk Wiebe retired from the National Security Agency after 32 years. He's recipient of the NSA's second highest award, the Meritorious Civilian Service Award, the director of the CIA's Meritorious Unit Award. Good to have you both with us. And 410-319-8888 is the number here to join us. But, Norman, let me start with you. This is we've been following this case, Jeffrey Sterling being one of the few black case officers, African-American case officers in the CIA, was accused of giving the stories to James Risen when he wrote the stories in the New York Times and was just convicted yesterday. So talk about the significance from your perspective.
Well, the significance includes that the people who want to clamp down on the flow of information found it very useful to pursue Jeffrey Sterling for more than 10 years and pretty much James Risen as well. In other words, the U.S. government, the CIA, and other top so-called intelligence agencies understand the link between whistleblowing and independent journalism in a way that, frankly, many journalists or proclaimed advocates of press freedom do not. And that is that you can't have truly independent journalism unless there's a flow of information from government and corporate entities where those entities at the top don't want the information to flow, and that's where whistleblowing is essential. I want to say that our discussion now is actually quite related to the one you just had on the air. Jeffrey Sterling told me and Judith Ehrlich, and we've released documentary about him this morning, Sterling told us that for years he went to civil rights organizations and pointed out to them that he was fired from the CIA after he filed a lawsuit alleging racial discrimination, and then he was targeted and then indicted on the basis of the fact that he had antagonized people at the top of the CIA, both his racial discrimination suit and then basically serving as a whistleblower through channels to the Senate Intelligence Committee about a misbegotten CIA operation. So he's been very much targeted because he, as he says in the film release today, stood up for himself and pursued a racial discrimination lawsuit. And when he went to civil rights organizations, they were frightened by the fact that he had crossed swords with the CIA, and I think that's something that needs to be dealt with.
And Kirk, please jump in here with this. I think that part of I'm going to come back to something that Norman was saying, but this is, I think, you know, on the heels of the court ruling on the NSA the other day, and this conviction of Jeffrey Sterling, maybe I'm making too much of the juxtaposition of these, but it seems like we're at a place where something needs to break or can break if a public can even be aware and may be made to pay attention.
Well, I think you're right about the seriousness of it. In fact, it's frightening. There's an attitude that's overtaken government authority, power. I think some of it's crept into the courts. There's almost a collusion I smell between the judiciary and the executive and maybe even the judiciary and the legislative branches. Things are too cozy. And when that happens, the whole system upon which we were built as a nation, as you know, the three pillars of government, which were supposed to produce yin and yang across all the possibilities of relationships, really has produced a good old boys network, at least an agreement, a tacit agreement, not to upset each other's punch bowls. And that leads to these kinds of opportunities for what I call injustice. To follow on to Norman's point, here the government uses emails and phone calls. Metadata is the word. Now, we know what metadata is. It's addressing data. Because of the Snowden leaks, we've been discussing that a lot. You know, metadata is great for setting up pointers where to look for additional information. But metadata is never evidence of guilt or innocence. It's simply an address, a fact. And for the government to play metadata as indicting somehow the honor to the integrity of Jeffrey Sterling is absurd in the extreme.
You know, and it kind of fits into some of the things you've been writing a lot about, Norman, the pieces you've written in the last month, when you refer to Jeffrey Sterling as the invisible man, and then wrote another piece about why the CIA is so eager to demolish Jeffrey Sterling. And to me, they're really directly connected. I mean, and again, this is a case that I have not seen the press really hit in a large way like they have some of the others.
Yes, I think that's right. You know, the investigative journalist Marcy Wheeler and I covered the trial for ExposedFacts.org. And the point that Kirk just made, I think, is very profound because the use and misuse of metadata in the prosecution of Jeffrey Sterling was really an outrage. And not only selective prosecution to choose to prosecute him, whereas there are top leakers like David Petraeus who get a slap on the wrist or sometimes a fondle on the wrist.
Right.
But also we have this dynamic where the character assassination that is so routine against whistleblowers was used at the get-go against Jeffrey Sterling more than 4 years ago from his indictment to the present. And then at the trial, much as Kirk is describing, there was a blank put out there, and the character assassination filled it in. And the blank was called metadata. So we heard all of this testimony about email between Risen and Sterling, who emailed to who, at what date, at what time, for how long, phone calls that were placed, but they were blank in terms of content. And the prosecution was ready, willing, and able to fill in that blank with all of the aspersions and negativity they attributed toward the defendant.
You know, I'm watching this as well. I mean, I was read something else that you wrote, Jeffrey, and I'm curious about Jeffrey Sterling, Norman. And I'll go to Kirk first and come back to you. That we just had finished conversation about early in the program about the battle over where the six police officers who were charged in the death of Frederick Gray will be tried. And they're asking for a change of venue because Philly won't get a fair trial in Baltimore City, and then it was noted that the trial that took place for Jeffrey Sterling took place where the jury is pulled from Northern Virginia, home of CIA headquarters, the Pentagon, the military industrial complex has a lot of major consulting offices there, and they came back with guilty verdicts on all counts. And there's that too. I mean. And maybe I'm making too much of that, Kirk.
No, you are not. You know, juries are humans. And the whole Northern Virginia corridor, well into Maryland, I would actually say the Baltimore, Washington area, is rife with contractors and people who feed from the trough of public funds via contracts to NSA and the entire intelligence community. Including the CIA. So your point is well taken. And I'm a little bit surprised. I don't know if his attorney asked for a change in venue, but I certainly would have.
I was told, actually, by attorneys that if the trial had taken place in the District of Columbia rather than Northern Virginia, there is a decent chance that the verdict would have been acquittal rather than guilty. Here we are speaking in the shadow of the NSA, and I think the really heroic efforts of whistleblowers, Kirk Wiebe, Ed Loomis, Tom Drake, Bill Binney, has really pointed the way to honesty and being willing to speak difficult truths. And that has to do not only with whistleblowing, but the entire necessity of having the First Amendment utilized by journalists and the public to challenge official stories when so often they're not only mendacious but dangerous.
So two quick last questions here. I'll start with Kirk, and then I'm going to come back to Norman and talk about where this thing goes from here, what happens to Jeffrey Sterling and his family. But you know, Kirk, we're in a very kind of some ways, xenophobic stage in our country, in the sense that with people being paranoid and worried about Al-Qaeda or terrorism and the negotiations with Iran, and most of the polls show that there's wide support for some toughness in our approach as a country. And at the same time, there are people like you and others who have stood up and said something's amiss here, and for us to have a proper intelligence agency, we have to do things in a different way. But that's where I'm talking about politically where we are at the moment to get that message across, to get that conversation started, again, given the conviction of people like Jeffrey Sterling.
Well, it's difficult at best. We are truly trying to climb a mountain because most of the major media are parroting what the government's saying. I mean, whether it's Fox News or CNN, what we see is Michael Hayden out espousing the need for extended surveillance authorities and even to grow them. And you hear it from any number of talking heads. The director of DHS was on Fox saying it. And now, I don't mind them saying it, but what I do mind is what happened to fair and balanced? What happened to hosting people with opposing views? That's what I'm not seeing. And I'm afraid there's some untoward influence being a pressure, if you will, being applied by government authorities, don't know who, but we could guess, on the upper levels of the, whether it's the owners of networks or the senior producers, I don't know. But somewhere, if you try to find an equal balance presentation on this subject that you said is so important, and indeed it is, it's not happening except on shows like this one.
So Norman, so I'm curious, what happens now to Jeffrey Sterling and his family, and B, where do you and your colleagues take this next phase of the effort to open all this up?
Jeffrey Sterling is heading to prison for a 3.5-year sentence. He's been ordered to report at a date not yet specified. And his wife, Holly Sterling, will move if it's going to be very far from their home in the St. Louis area. At ExposedFacts.org, which is part of the Institute for Public Accuracy, we're continuing to organize. Kirk Wiebe and many other great whistleblowers, as well as journalists, are on our advisory board. And people are invited to join with us at ExposedFacts.org. This is a multi-front war, so to speak, in a peaceful way from our standpoint. We're fighting many battles to defend whistleblowers, to fight for journalistic freedom, and also to challenge an administration that is really waging a very intensifying siege against really the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments.
So tell us very quickly, Norman, where people can connect with this.
We're inviting people to visit us at exposedfacts.org. As we speak, the exclusive video of interviewing Jeffrey and Holly Sterling is being posted momentarily. And we'd love for folks to join in to spread the word.
Well, what we'll do is I'll definitely look at that after we get off the air today this afternoon. And perhaps in the coming weeks we can get you back on here, maybe with his wife or whoever else, to kind of talk about that some more and let people understand that so we can get more information out. Norman, I do appreciate all the work you do as Executive Director of the Institute of Public Accuracy, Coordinator for ExposedFacts.org. You've been really doing yeoman's work here. Thank you so much, Norman, for being with us again today.
Thank you.
Kirk Wiebe, it's been a pleasure to have you on this. I'm going to just say thank you for standing up and being one of those people unafraid to stand up. And I appreciate your service to this country and also your standing up as an American citizen. So, J. Kirk Wiebe, thank you so much for being with us today as well.
Thank you.
We're going to take a very brief break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Donna Edwards, who is running to become the next senator from the state of Maryland. Don't go away. Absolutely. Say it again, y'all. Look out. What is it good for? Absolutely. Listen to me.